Okay, I was just commenting on the fact, and I commend these brothers who prior to this time had really little exposure to other unions in terms of connecting prior to this event. Just as our local was fairly isolated until around 1997 when we became more progressive, more involved in the quest for social justice and to correct some of the misdeeds that we have seen that was perpetrated upon the state and our community in particular. So to give a little background, our families in most cases have preceded us on the waterfront, and even farther than that, right after the Civil War, a group of newly freed blacks formed a protective union in Charleston. And they had the foresight at that time to know that collectively they could demand better from their employers. So how much more should we be aware of that today? And that's why we have the pride. That's why we felt that we were not going to allow anyone to come in and pull down the standards that's been built up over the years. Blood, sweat, and tears, literally. We did the jobs that basically the white male didn't subject himself to. And at that time, it wasn't such a great job. The benefits weren't there. But these group of men got together, and I believe they saw into the future, and they saw that if they stood together, they could make this a better way of life. And we are living that reality, so we feel compelled to protect that way of life. Not only do we feel compelled to protect that way of life just for us, we believe that all workers deserve dignity in the workplace. They deserve good pay for the work they do, and they deserve to look forward to a good retirement through pension and welfare. So that's the kind of awareness that brought us to this point, because after 1997, we tried to respond to every entity, every working situation that was in jeopardy. And prior to that time, the government sort of acknowledged that the union was there. This same anti-union government knew that the union was there, but we were so beneficial to the state. We were second only to Japan in production on the waterfront. So when you look in that venue, we were not a threat to that status quo, that anti-unionism. So they let us fly below the radar for a long time until we start to get involved in trying to raise the plight of all workers and trying to fight some of the fights that were in the civil rights arena and the social justice arena. Then they started to think, these guys are organizing workers. They are raising some of these civil questions. They are getting out of the realm of where the benefits of them being productive outweigh the risk of them threatening our the way we work people in the state. So they launched an attack. They waited patiently for an opportunity where they could legitimize their effort to crush the union, to break the strongest union in South Carolina, to break their hold on the dock, and therefore they could, with hope, to create an avalanche of getting rid of the rest of the unions in the state. We firmly believe that's the case. But we also are aware now that when they made those plans, they focused only on this small union, this small amount of unionization in the state of South Carolina. They did not count on the galvanizing of all of the unions in South Carolina, all of the unions in America, and all of the European unions, the Japanese unions, the Australian unions. They did not count on that kind of coming together. So one of the five last night thanked Charlie Condon for awakening the labor movement, which has now found a way to tap into this dormant potential they had all the time. And that's basically our story. That's basically the significance of this struggle. We believe is that it shows that a concerted effort on behalf of workers, an effort that is right, an effort that has a common denominator with workers all over the world, not just in South Carolina, not just in Korea, not just in Japan, all over the world. The African dockers, we are in contact with the African dockers as we speak. They have a struggle very similar to the European dockers. And through the formation of IDC, the International Dock Workers Council, we plan to assist financially, we plan to assist physically, and we definitely assist in a mental awareness that you're not standing alone. In that council, we adopted the theme that we will never be alone again. And I think that's very important. I think that's the momentum that we need as a labor movement in this country to go forward to organize the unorganized, because organized people are the minority. And in fact, we cannot concentrate on just those workers that are under the union blanket. We must be concerned about all workers. Because if we plan to get pro-labor legislation and pro-labor conditions approved through the political process, we must have everyday people out there, all of the people out there, impacting and influencing the politicians that make the rules. And that won't be done if we selfishly guard our own interests. I mean, the people at McDonald's, if they're treated unfairly, we should be on the lines with them. The people at the hospital, if they're treated unfairly, we should be out there. We should, if we can do no more than raise the awareness that this institution is not treating workers right, that's our mission. I think organized labor have that responsibility for two reasons. We have the money to fight some of the battles that people in the private sector can't. And we also have the machinery to put people on the streets. And those are, you know, some of the things that we've learned through the struggle and that we plan to apply as we go forward to correct some of the other situations in South Carolina and throughout the South. And because of that, you heard the gratitude of these brothers last night. They expressed that they were very appreciative of all of these people coming to their aid. And the one thing that they did say was that you can count on us. We will respond. We will go back to Local 1422 at this next meeting, and we will do something financially for the carousel workers here. We believe that might only be a drop in the bucket, but it helps. We had a lady that was a retired steel worker. I can't call her name now. No, her husband was a retired steel worker. He had passed, but she heard about the struggle of the Charleston Five. She sent a check for $15, and I will never forget that. That was significant to me. She was a widow. But she was concerned about the struggle, concerned about the attack on the way of life that gave her and her husband and her children a very good life. And she acted. It caused her to come out of the little comfort zone that she had left. And she reacted. She sent a check for $15. And as I looked at that check in the offices upstairs, I thought this check is just as potent, just as important as the check for $100,000 that came from the West Coast Longshoremen. So this is the kind of awareness that we believe that has been aroused through the struggle. And I believe we can use that momentum to do greater things in this labor movement to propel us where we need to be. We're still behind. We're still behind in the game, but we are in a position where I believe we can win, because what we are saying and what we are representing is for people. Anybody that's against the things that unions provide for people in general is anti-person, is anti-people. So if we package what we represent, what we propose for the way people should live, if we package it properly, I believe we can win a massive sweep. And that's why I think that's the significance of, I think, the struggle, at least as it presents itself to me. I think, importantly, the issue of the Confederate flag fits into that very easily. when you look at the history that you just quoted, we did the work that, again, that white males didn't subject themselves to. And it was a dirty kind of work. I remember my father coming home and taking off clothes that he wouldn't wear anymore. You couldn't clean them enough. He had to discard them. You know, those were the kind of jobs that were not desirable, but they had to be done to move the economy, to move the city, to move the state. And somebody had to do it. So, but the power structure in the state, one that lends itself to cheap labor, slavery-type labor, in order to increase the margin of profit. That power structure is the kind of structure that recognizes that unions advocate decent wages and good benefits. It's not a coincidence that the State Chamber of Commerce and the Manufacturers Alliance have colluded and have planned to keep the amount of unionization down in the state of South Carolina. In fact, to destroy the union movement completely, because they know that that's a better financial situation. For just as slavery was a financial institution, this attempt, this well-planned attempt to keep the workers at a minimum in South Carolina is a financial proposition. The flag represents, to that power structure, a time where they did get work for less. They didn't have to pay very much for them. They didn't have to give very good care to the slaves. In fact, the theory how they made that work in a lot of ways was to describe these workers as subhuman, so it justified the work with their Christian background to treat people in a certain kind of way, should I say subhuman in a certain kind of way, to foster their economic interests. So it ties in these people, to them, the flag flying represents that period of time, and it's symbolic to them, because in that period of time, they were able to get anything from workers on demand and did not have to give very much to get it. So we believe while a guy may have his flag in his front yard on top of his personal house, it's inappropriate, and it was inappropriate to be on top of the state house, which is all of our house. We pay the taxes to paint and maintain that house. We pay the taxes for that house to welcome people to the state, and we don't pay for them to celebrate a period of time that was so atrocious and allowed all kind of atrocities to be perpetrated among any kind of minority, particularly this the black minority. So there's a connect between the efforts of this current day group, the Manufacturers Alliance and the State Chamber, and the people that worship the Confederacy and what it stood for. And it's economic, you know. You have to look through the smoke screen, and you can see clearly it is an economic proposition. It's a ideology of exclusion, where because they feared that if we got involved in the process, that changes would come, and they would not have that control over the economic and political system that they historically have had. I think the dock workers are microcosm of all workers. But in particular, the dock workers are so closely connected, simply because we connected through our work. Charleston longshoremen handle the cargo on one end. The Japanese handle the very same cargo that we put on the ship, that we unload off the ship. So it's a very close connection there. I should be concerned about the safety of how this cargo is loaded, because I got a brother on the other end that's handling the same cargo. I don't want to do anything that jeopardizes his well-being. So through that close-knit work relationship, I should say, we have found a way to connect, because they're under the same conditions. They do the same work. The Japanese dock workers, the American dock workers, the African dock workers, the Peruvian dock workers, the Spanish dock workers. why should they be paid differently? They are working for the same employer who goes into an area, and if he can exploit the conditions in that area, he does. Why should we allow that? Because it tells me that if he exploits those workers when he can, just as soon as the opportunity presents itself in America, in Charleston, he will do the same to me. So it's that kind of sameness, that kind of, I call it a common denominator among workers, dock workers in particular, and all workers, that common denominator exists. But in the dock workers, the IDC, which is the International Dock Workers Council, one of the reasons for establishing that council was when they saw problems in Charleston and when they saw problems in other parts of the world, the Liverpool dock workers didn't have the benefit of an international response. And they were crushed. They lost their jobs, you know. And we heard of that a little, but now we have consolidated our concerns in the IDC. And one of the things that the IDC offers dock workers that the ITF, the International Transportation Federation, doesn't, is an immediate dockers response. Rather than go through the red tape of the ITF and maybe coming up with a response half a year later, the IDC is designed to, if there's a problem in Los Angeles, a problem in Africa, where we can communicate effectively right away and we can start to strategize an answer or a response to that particular problem. And again, the reason why this has come together, we believe, is because of that common denominator. Workers do the same thing, work all over the world. And they deserve the same thing, respect, dignity, good pay, all over the world.